Good morning and welcome, everyone. We're very happy to have Francois David back to give the QFT3 lectures. So if you can turn your video on, that would be fantastic. If you don't feel comfortable,
yes,
that's okay. But if you can, that would help make this more interactive. So questions are encouraged.
Yes.
Please raise your hands or unmute yourself. If you prefer to ask a question anonymously, just send it to me in the chat and I'll relay it to Francois. So without further ado, I'll hand things over to Francois.
Okay, thank you very much. So I'm very happy to be there, although it's only through screen. But I hope to be there 2 weeks from now and to see you either in at least in real time and hopefully in the time room or elsewhere. So this lecture is a QFT3, so that's the first time I'm doing QFT3, but I've been doing QFT2 for about 10 years. So it's supposed to be a continuation of this QFT2, but part of the material I've been doing in QFT2 is now covered in the core course you had already last year. And so what I'm planning and what I've been asked by Maite and Dan is to make more advanced things and introduce a few more, advanced topics, but related to the topics I've been covering in the previous year. So I hope that the lecture notes that are available, which are the lecture notes from 2 years ago, will still be useful. I started to update them, and as things are going to advance, I hope to be able to provide the new materials that I hope I will be able to treat in the course. However, this depends on me, and this depends also of you. So if you find that I'm going too slowly, that I'm covering materials that all of you knows very well, just tell me and I will just skip and go further. If you think that I'm going too fast, or if all of you or some of you needs to have some more discussion, of course, you are welcome to discuss. I can send you some more material. I can make some informal discussion using Zoom or the Blackboard. Of course, the only real constraint is that I'm 6 hours in advance from the East Coast. I'm in continental time, Europe continental time, and therefore it's going to make things a bit difficult. But please ask questions and comments. Tell me if I made mistakes, if there are typos, anywhere. So this course is supposed to be interactive. Okay, so now this is the first time I'm doing an online lecture. So I apologize if you are not very fluent in doing that. I've been very much to do blackboards or talks with slides, but I think the blackboard is much better for lectures. So also, if you don't hear very well what I'm saying, because I just have some earphone and maybe the settings are not perfect, just tell me. Okay, so what I've been asked to cover in these lectures, and what I hope to cover, is the first going from path integral to functional integrals quantization of quantum field theories. So is it okay when I read? Can you read what I'm writing? Okay, good.
Looks good.
Okay, thank you. So, and first what I'm planning to do is first to do that for the simple case that you have seen in detail in the QFT 1 and 2 course, which are spin zero and 1/2 fields. I mean, what is called the scalar field and of course the Dirac. And I will mostly be discussing the Dirac fermions. Then, going from that, I'm planning to discuss some a bit advanced topics in renormalization. And renormalization group theory. Thank you. You already had an introduction to renormalization theory in QFT2 course, maybe QFT1, 2, in the case of the spin zero field, the scalar field, and for Maxwell electro, the QED, so Dirac fermions plus spin one fields, at basically at the order of one loop, and I'm going to discuss a bit more the general formalism, why it works. You all also, I think, heard about, have seen what is renormalization group equation. And you also, I think, have been introduced the concept of renormalization group in the context of statistical theory, statistical mechanics, critical phenomena. And therefore, I'm planning to discuss the relation between what's called the perturbative renormalization in QFT and in statistical mechanics, the point of view of Ken Wilson, so what is called the Wilsonian renormalization. So this should, I hope, cover half of the lectures. And then what I'm planning to do after that is to discuss, of course, quantization of gauge series, which is something that you are going to need. So gauge series are spin one particles, vector fields. And of course, the issue of gauge fixing that we have been discussing in QED becomes very important in non-abelian gauge series.
Excuse me, sorry.
Yes.
We just lost. Oh, now it's back because we lost the focus, but then now it's back.
Oh, yes. I think the camera focuses a bit on, maybe it focuses automatically on me. So is it okay?
Now it's good. Yeah, thanks.
Okay. So I should, I don't know if you see me. Maybe you could see me when I'm here. So I'm going to discuss the quantization of gauge series and the formulation of quantization by functional integrals, the issue of renormalization, the issue of gauge invariance, and especially some more advanced topics, which are, for instance, what is called the BRST symmetry, which is something which plays a crucial role in quantization of gauge series. But you are going to discuss to meet BRST symmetries also in the course of on conformal field theory, which is given by Jaume Gomis, I think, and also in string theory, so in CFT and string theory. And also a bit in statistical mechanics. And some other topics which could be anomalies, instanton, which is related to topology in gear series, topological issues, and so on. Okay, so that's hope. So I'm definitely will cover this, and this a bit depending on how fast we go and also what you prefer. Any question? No? Okay, so let me start now, 10 minutes. So first, so today I'm going to discuss, I'm going to introduce the quantization by functional integration from the point of view of the scalar free field. I presume you have been studied field And you have studied the quantization of the scalar free field by the canonical formulation, creation and annihilation operator of modes, the algebra, and how you build the Hilbert space of states for the spin zero field, okay? And I'm going, this is going to cover, I think, two or three lectures because we are going to do some more advanced things. But so first, what I would like to do is to discuss a general framework, which is how we can consider a quantum field theory, both for real time and for Euclidean time, because that's something that's, which is useful both for making formula simpler and to discuss, for instance, the relation between renormalization in quantum field theory and renormalization, Wilsonian renormalization in statistical mechanics. And that's important. So it's also part of the tool, of the toolbox of theoreticians in physics. Okay, so I'm going first to start by this issue at a very easy and general level. So, and I think you have seen that already in the quantum theory course, the level of path integral, because functional integral is just somehow trivial or straightforward generalization of path integral for particles to fields, to quantum fields. Okay. So let me remember what is, so the idea is to, that we consider, of course, in quantum field theory, quantum theory which are invariant under the Poincaré group. So they are relativistic. All the issue of quantum field theory comes from special relativity. And therefore, in Minkowski spacetime, the elements of length is, well, in my notation, dt squared minus plus dx squared. So Minkowski space, you have time, you have space, you have the light cone, and the invariant metric. If I state that the speed of light, light speed is one, is minus dt squared plus dx squared. And that's the choice of metric. So I'm going to choose a signature, which is minus plus plus plus. I'm used to this one for some lectures and some in some famous textbook like Weinberg or in quantum gravity, the physicists prefer this one, but it's in some other one that's plus, minus, minus, minus. So this is called, I think, the West Coast metric. This is the East Coast. Okay, of course, they are just equivalent, that just, okay, so that's the one I'm going to prefer. And one of the reasons is that by the operation of what's called Vick rotation, if instead of considering the physical time as a real variable, this is a real axis for this physical time, this is some arbitrary origin of the physical time, this is the time axis, you may consider that time is imaginary. Oh, I'm sorry, this is some announcement in Saclay, in my lab. We have just to wait. You can't escape, so this one here. Okay, so you can consider Euclidean time by making a rotation by an angle of minus pi over 3. So we have real time, which is the usual t variable. And we have Euclidean time, let's call it tau, which is minus I times t. T is I tau, I t. So you see that when time is imaginary and negative, with a negative imaginary part, Euclidean time is positive. It's pi over 3, of course. Okay, so this operation is like a Vick rotation, and you see that if you make a Vick rotation like that, the metric becomes d e squared equal d tau squared plus d x squared, which is the Euclidean metric. So Minkowski space becomes Euclidean space. Okay. And the important relation between Euclidean time and Minkowski or real physical time is this one. So it looks like just a mathematical trick, but it's something which plays a very important in the formalism, and that's very convenient. Okay, so now, of course, now let's go back to the scalar free field, which is Klein-Gordon. That's a quantization of the field which classically obeys the Klein-Gordon equation. So this field is classically this is a field. So you have space time. So we have x equal cx, and a space time field configuration is just a function. So to x associate a function phi of x, which is real, remember. It's scalar, there is no spin, and the spin, there is no charge, so phi is just a real variable, okay, like the X field. And then the classical action, for the free field, you derive the equation of motion of the free field and the Klein-Gordon equation by the Euler-Lagrange equation is just, so let's call it S for action. So it's a functional of a field configuration, and it's an integral over whole space, the time, an integral over X, and my space time. So I have one time. So the total dimension is d. So there is one time, and space is d minus one. So this is a d minus one dimensional equation. It's just 1/2 of d t phi squared. This is a kinetic equation. In some sense, this is a kinetic equation. And then we have minus 1/2 of the derivative with respect to x of phi, so this is a spatial gradient squared, and minus an m squared parameter divided by 2 phi squared. So this is a kinetic term. This is the, let's just write it like that. This is a potential energy term. So this is a Lagrangian density. So of course, this is the integral over. So that's an integral over a space, a time, integral over a space, over a time slice. And this is a total, this is a Lagrangian. And this is the action. Okay. And of course, by Euler Lagrange equation, what you get are the Klein-Gordon, namely d over dt squared minus gradient squared plus m squared of phi equals zero. Okay, that's very classical. Okay, so this is a free field in the action and the equation of motion of the free field in Minkowski space-time. And if you play with the Vic rotation, in Euclidean space-time, we are going to consider the Euclidean action I denote S E for Euclidean, which is just, well, now you see that the integral, you know, the space and time play is the same role, so X is tau x, which I can denote just x mu. Mu equal 0 to d minus 1. So this is integral dd of x times, and here all the signs becomes positive, because when you change t into it, this becomes a minus d over d tau. So this is going to be 1/2 of d mu phi squared. There is a plus sign and a plus sign here, plus m squared over 2 phi squared. So this is what is denoted in the literature, the Euclidean action. And if you are a bit careful, you realize that the Euclidean action is not just obtained by taking the real time action and making the Vic rotation, changing t into minus I, x zero. So here you don't change t equal minus I, x zero, because there is a factor minus I that comes from the dt. If you make a change in the integration of a dt, you get minus I times dx zero. So in fact, the relation between the Euclidean action and the formula for the real time action is minus I S of phi. Oh, it's a bit of, so if you make a naive analytic continuation, and this I is quite important. Okay. And now the equation of motion. The equation of motion. Well, here there is no real time, so there is no real motion. But when you look for the extrema of S of phi under a variation of phi, what you find is the equation minus delta plus m squared of phi equals zero, where delta is just what's called the Laplace well, mathematician called this Laplace-Beltrami operator, which is just d over dx mu squared. So it's a standard Laplacian in Euclidean space-time, which define, for instance, harmonic functions. Okay. So this is just the classical theory for a scalar free field. And finally, of course, the parameter m, which is there, is going to be the mass of the excitation phi, which are going to be the boson quantized. Okay. So this is a classical theory, and in order to study the, you know, the classical dynamics, you just have to solve the Klein-Gordon equation with a proper initial and boundary condition, etc. So that's classical. And of course, this is an equation which is linear in phi. And the equation of motion are linear in phi because the action is quadratic in phi. Action here is quadratic. Okay. So at that stage, I'm not going to make a very precise discussion of, well, what are the boundary conditions. So is time infinite, or is time, you know, contained in an interval between an initial and the final time when we study some dynamics? Is a space infinite or finite with some boundary condition? Is it periodic? We are going to discuss that later. At the moment, that's a general feature, but of course we can introduce issues of boundary conditions. Okay. So now let me go to the path integral formulation, well, to the functional integral. Formulation. I'm going to discuss it at a very sketchy level today. Well, you have seen in the quantum theory lectures that one way to quantize, to define, you know, compute the propagation of the wave function of a quantum particle in a potential, which obeys some classical Lagrangian with a kinetic term and a potential term, is according to Feynman. That's one of the great discovery of Feynman, by computing amplitudes, quantum amplitudes, through a functional through a path integral namely formal sum over all possible classical histories starting from an initial configuration to final classical configuration with some weight, which takes into account all the quantum interference phenomena. So quantum effects come from quantum interference between classical trajectories, but trajectories that do not obey the equation of motion. And going from a path integral for a particle to a function integral for fields is formally very easy. Instead of having an integral with a weight which is exponential of the action, so instead of considering an object which is a sum of a path histories of the particle with a weight factor, in fact, a phase factor, which is exponential of I times divided by h bar times the action associated to the classical trajectory, where of course h bar is h divided by h divided by 2 pi, the action quantum, the quantum of action, where h is Planck's constant. Well, now we consider that we have an action associated to any field configuration. And formally, we make an integral or an infinite sum over all field configuration. So we have a measure. This is a measure over field configuration in space-time. And the phase is the exponential of I divided by h bar times the action of this classical configuration. Okay, and formally, this measure is just some product over all points in space, in space-time. So I mean Minkowski 1, e minus 1, this is space-time, of the measure for field variation at a given point x. So you have space-time. So this is time. This is one of the dimension x. And to each point in space-time, if this is a real axis, which a vertical axis is the axis of the value, the real value of phi, well, field configuration is something which is a surface, a very random surface, you know, a surface, you know, which describes, which corresponds to a field configuration, a field configuration history. Sorry, I presume now I'm writing too small and too bad, too poorly. But basically,
still works for me.
Why? It's okay for you?
From my side, yes. Others?
Okay, good. Well, okay, but still, pay attention and tell me if my writing becomes too poor, because that's the one tendency I have. You know, my entropy wins, and therefore there is more and more noise for an outside observer. Okay, so basically, this is an object. I won't tell you exactly what it is. So basically, what are the boundary conditions of the field? Is this measure well-defined? But we are going to deal with functional integral of this kind when studying quantum field via this quantization method based on functional integral. So this is a typical object we have to consider. And a bit later, during this week, we are going to discuss in more detail how this is properly defined. Okay.
Excuse me, sir.
Yes.
Basically, yes. We can say that that the measure is a limit of a lattice, right?
Yes, exactly. Precisely. You are right. That's one way to define this measure, is to discretize space-time by discretizing space, discretizing time, and then taking continuum limit. And if everyone knows about this trick, I can skip it, but otherwise I'm going to explain that a bit later. Well, possibly today, yes. Okay, so the question is how to define that properly. The important point you see here is that the measure, this formal measure, here it's defined as formal. If you show this to a mathematician, will immediately tell you, well, this is not a properly well-defined measure in the sense of integration theory. But mathematician knows how to define that, and physicists too. Anyway, so at the moment, the important point is that this measure is local, you see. There is a local weight for each point. So in some sense, the measure on a field configuration is independent on each point of space-time. That's local measure. This is a local measure, and that's very important.
Okay. Could you repeat this part, please?
Pardon?
Could you just repeat what you just said? Yeah.
I just said that this measure is a local measure because it's a product on each point of space-time of the an independent measure on the value of the field at each separate point in space-time. So it's just a direct product of the measure of the value of phi, which is some variable on each point. So it's the same sense that if you want, the measure in two-dimensional space-time, if you have a two-dimensional space-time, dx dy is a product of the measure on one axis and the measure on another axis. So in that sense, it is local.
Okay, it makes sense. Thanks.
That's in this sense. It's a direct product. Measures. Okay. So this measure is local. But of course, you can say that you have a measure and then it's multiplied by a function. So this is also a measure. The rule thing is a measure over some space of all field configurations. But this measure is not local, because the action here is local. It's an integral over what's happening at each point of space-time, but it contains those derivative terms. So there is a correlation between what's happening at two neighboring points of space-time. It depends on how the field, this measure depends on the variation of the field, but the local variation. So it's still local, but in a weaker sense than this measure. You see? Okay. Well, formally, I think a mathematical physicist says that this measure is ultra local, and this measure is still local, but in this weaker sense that it depends on the local variation. But it doesn't depend on correlation between variation of the field at far away point in space-time. See? Okay. So I wrote this. And and now, well, we can do this. We can play the same game in Euclidean space-time. Okay, this was, of course, for real time. So this is this functional integral. Will allow us to construct a quantum theory of fields. But for Euclidean functional integral, well, instead of doing that, what we can define is some functional integral with a measure which is almost the same as this one, but let me write an E for E because it's a slight, just a normalization factor which is different. And then you take exponential of, well, remember, SE is minus I S of phi. So if you change, S of phi is I times SE of phi. So you have I times I, which is minus one. So this is minus one. Well, there is a, if you want to keep h bar, you keep h bar times the Euclidean action. Remember, this is the Euclidean action. It's written there. And this is the Euclidean functional integral, obtained just by this trick of making a weak rotation. But this is a way to obtain a mathematical object, which is defined like that, which is a functional integral for the theory at Euclidean time, okay? And here you see that there is an important difference. Here, as for Feynman's path integral, this is a phase. This is a phase. And here, exponential minus one over h bar s of phi is just a positive number. So what's called, you can view it as a weight factor. Okay, it's positive. And you see also that here h bar plays a role of a temperature, because this is very similar in statistical mechanics, where in statistical mechanics, you have seen is a course by, I think, David about statistical mechanics. Well, you have a system, you have a sum of a states, of a microstates. And if you define the sum over the microstates of the theory of exponential minus beta times the energy of the microstate, where beta is just one over, it's the inverse of the temperature with Boltzmann constant. This defines the partition function of a system in statistical mechanics, which is a basic object to construct the thermodynamics of a system, a gas system of spins, of magnets in a body, et cetera. So this is a partition function. So you see here that H bar plays a role of temperature, and the Euclidean action plays a role of the energy of a configuration. S is the energy of a configuration. And H bar plays a role of the temperature. So basically, you have that H bar is analog to the temperature. Okay, so for this reason, in the literature, you will find very often that this functional integral, both in the Euclidean setting and in fact in the real-time setting, is denoted by the letter Z, by analogy with statistical mechanics. Mathematically, it's an object similar or analogous to a partition function of such system, here at real time and here at, well, here at Euclidean time and here at real time. Okay. Okay.
So I had a question.
So how are both of these objects, the Z for Euclidean functional integral and the real time one, both of them, means once we evaluate the integral, both of them will give the same number, right? Means if, means what I mean is, no. How do we relate DE,
okay,
the measure?
I'm going to discuss that later when I'm going to discuss the correlation functions. So the vacuum expectation of value of operators in a quantum theory. In a quantum field theory, because with this object you can compute time ordered vacuum cool. expectation value of time ordered of products of local operators.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because we are in real time.
Okay.
And if you consider the Euclidean functional integral associated to the same action,
mm-hmm.
what you are going to compute is expectation value for the same operator, so the same physical observable,
mm-hmm.
but for the system at thermal equilibrium at finite temperature. So thermal equilibrium means that you have no time. Well, you can compute correlation function for a system, a quantum system at finite temperature and time ordered correlation function, but that's a bit slightly more complicated, but it can be done. But basically this object allows to compute time ordered products of operator. This object allows to compute operator for a theory at finite temperature, a quantum theory at finite temperature.
So, but the way we derive means the exponential factor is exactly the same with just a change of variable. Yeah. So you are saying that the measure is different. It's not just change of variable.
Well, I'm going to discuss that. I think either I do that today or I do that next lecture. I think it's better next lecture. In fact, since you go from the real-time theory to the Euclidean theory by making an analytic continuation of the mm-hmm. time variables, when you have correlation functions that depends on both of time and space, the one at Euclidean time are obtained by making an analytic continuation of the expectation value of products of operator.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And this is possible because in time and space variables, correlation function of local quantum field theory have some very important analyticity property. So if you define a theory at real time and in a physical space time, Minkowski space time, it depends both on time and space. So the space time mm-hmm. coordinate x mu, but you can extend them into complex variable.
Mm-hmm.
And the function has the properties of being analytic in those variables. And you can extend them in the complex plane up to some point. And this domain of analyticity contains the Euclidean spacetime.
Okay.
And those method of analyticity, both in space variable and in the conjugate variable, which are the impulsion variable, which are very important in scattering theory, the property of analyticity for complex coordinate or for complex momenta is one of the very important tool in quantum theory and for high energy physics.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. But I'm going to discuss that, I think, next lecture. So maybe now I still have about 10 minutes. So 10, 15 minutes. So I think the best I can do is to go back to the remark that one of you, which is that it is possible to define this more properly using a discretization of space and time. And maybe I'm going to do that. Well, I can do that for the path integral at real time. So let me, with this. Let me erase this. And let me erase this. Okay, so I come back to this functional integral, which is defined formally by this object for a scalar field with the action, or I erase the action, but you remember, or I should not have erased the action, I'm sorry. Okay, anyway, you remember that the action for the scalar free field in real time. Okay, and now how can you define this? You can discretize space-time. In fact, the idea of discretizing space in quantum theory is an idea which has been very much used in the 70s. It's a basis of what's called lattice field theory, which is still a very active field to study the non-perturbative properties of gauge theories. So it has direct relevance to high energy physics. And but it goes back to Heisenberg, who I think you find in some history of quantum physics books that Heisenberg had this idea in the 30s, before World War II. At a very, well, people were already starting to ask questions about the meaning of short distance high energy physics and also whether they can include gravity in that. Okay, so discretizing space-time is just a generalization of this operation of discretizing time, which is an important, you know, step in the construction of path integral by Feynman. That's how we got this idea of path integral. Okay, so now we have space and we have time. So I'm just going to consider a 1+1 dimensional space-time, but for simplicity. Okay, so you have time and you have one dimensional space. So the idea is to, instead of having a continuum time, to discretize time with some step, let's call it epsilon t. So time is now epsilon T times I is I an integer, negative or positive integer. Okay. So this is the way Feynman proceeds. But now, in order to define things properly, see, we have an infinite sum over space and time, we also discretize space with some step, which is epsilon x. And of course, since we started from a theory where the metric was minus dt squared plus dx squared, which is of course invariant by Lorentz transformation, if we discretize space and time, we cannot keep Lorentz symmetry, but at least we can keep this symmetry up to the sign by stating that epsilon t equal epsilon x is epsilon. Okay, so it's not, you can work without doing that, but that's a simplification. Simplification. So now your space-time is just a lattice. So space-time it's a square lattice, so it's now z to the power d, here d equal to, okay, and of course the field the field is defined only at the point of the lattice. So a point is given by coordinates epsilon I g, with I g some integer numbers, and phi of x is a variable. On the sides of the lattice. So we have a discrete collection. So phi becomes a discrete collections. Of phi, let's call it IG. It's still infinite if the lattice is infinite, but we have a discrete collection instead of having a continuum product. So it's mathematically more sensible. Okay. And with this, of course, you have to follow the argument of follow the receipt to construct a path integral. And this receipt, you can find it in the lecture notes and the lectures by Maite on path integrals. And you can also find it in my notes. So you have to discretize to replace two things. First, what is the measure? And what is the action? So first, the action. Remember, the action was integral dt, integral dx, 1/2 of dt phi squared minus dx phi squared. Well, there is 1/2 minus m squared phi squared. Okay, so now this sum of this integral of a space-time becomes this discrete action. It becomes a discrete action. So the discrete action becomes just a sum over the site of the lattice, sum over the site. The volume element in spacetime dt dx becomes just the volume of a cell. So it becomes an epsilon d. Well, in general, so x is epsilon x times some vector g, which g belongs to z d minus 1. Okay. So when d equals 2, it's just a number. So this is a volume element. Now we get this factor 1/2. Dt of phi, you have to replace the continuum derivative by the discrete derivative. So what is the discrete derivative in the phi relation? That's basically phi of I plus 1 g minus phi of, I'm sorry, I hope you will see. Let me write it later. Phi of I plus 1 g minus phi of I g divided by epsilon. This is a discrete derivative in the time direction squared. But same thing for the space derivative, you replace them by discrete derivative. So we get minus 1/2 of phi of I g plus, well, some epsilon vector plus 1. Well, let me assume that I'm just in two dimension. G plus 1 minus phi of I g divided by epsilon squared. And then for m squared phi squared, I just take a sum over each side of pi of g squared. So the discrete action is just obtained by replacing the integral by a discrete sum over sites or cells, and by replacing continuous derivative by discrete derivative. Okay, so that's the receipt. Replace D by discrete and replace integral by sum with a proper volume element and the discrete definition for derivative. So you see that this depends on epsilon discretization. Okay, so that's for the action. Now, what about the measure? Well, this requires slightly more work, but if you follow the receipt to construct the path integral step by step, you just have to be careful. What you get is that the measure d phi becomes, of course, a discrete, it's going to be an infinite product, but still a discrete product of over the sites. The value you take the measure, which is just a standard measure over the real variable, because this now this is a discrete real variable, so this is d phi ig, that's a standard real measure. And you have a normalization factor for the importance, because if you go back to your quantum theory lecture, there is an important renormalization, which depends on the step. And if you are careful, what you find, and this is, so you have a product, you have a factor, and this factor becomes 2i pi h bar divided by epsilon, remember that epsilon t equal epsilon x to the power d minus 2. That's in general, if you have if you are in d dimension, to the power minus 1/2. So this is a factor which, of course, we can factorize out of the functional integral, but it's important for actual calculation. And the factor depends on epsilon. And h bar. But not on the parameter of the action. Not an m, the mass. Okay. So that's a measure. And finally, well, let me just hand up just still 1 minute for the Euclidean. Okay, that's of course the same. But now, in the action, you have to replace the minus here by a plus. The minus by a plus, because in fact, space-time becomes just a lattice in Euclidean space-time. The lattice becomes, you have a lattice in Euclidean space. And the action, well, the I disappear. So the measure is just 2 pi h bar of epsilon d minus 2 minus 1/2. This is a factor per site. Okay. And remember, the functional integral is now is d phi e minus 1 over h bar s e. Okay. And so you see that in the Euclidean space-time, if you discretize space-time, what you have just, you get just is in fact an object which is very well known and studied in statistical mechanics that's found in textbook. It's a lattice of coupled oscillators. So the functional integral of the discretized free field in Euclidean space-time is just the partition function. We have seen that it's a partition function of a mechanical model of a lattice of coupled oscillators. So you have an oscillator on each point, and its position is labeled by phi, but the oscillators are coupled because there is a term in that once you have a spring between the neighboring oscillator. So you have a you have an harmonic oscillator, classical harmonic oscillator on each side, and in addition, there is an elastic harmonic force between neighboring oscillators. So each link, each edge of the lattice carries an oscillator too. Well, a coupling which makes oscillators. So it's coupled oscillators. Okay. So, Dan, am I done? Dan?
Yes, your lecture was scheduled for 1 hour. So,
yeah, okay. So it's a good time to stop. And see you on Thursday, same time, I think, where I'm going to discuss about the boundary condition, which is important because in fact, you know, it makes sense. You need a finite box or a finite space time. And also I'm going to the important issue of what we can compute with those objects, which are expectation value in some states of local operators in the theory, like the field operator that you have been studying and constructing in the QFT 1 and 2 courses. But that's going to be for next time. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, and if you have questions or remarks, just send me a mail.
Okay, thanks. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
I had a quick question, if that's okay.
Yes, yes, yes. Who are you?
I'm Charlie.
Charlie Cumming.
Yes, nice to meet you. I guess I was just wondering—
May I see your face? May I see your face? Just
sure.
Yeah, if your camera is working.
Okay. I guess—
Don't fall in, yes?
Yeah. I guess I was just wondering if it's ever useful to define when you're going onto a lattice, if you're ever going to define a dimensionless field variable so all the epsilons cancel everywhere, or is that not useful?
It can be useful for some, yes, you can do that. You just have to rescale things. Yes, that's useful. In fact, that's a good remark because, when doing that, there is an important quantity which appears, which is called the dimension of the field, mm-hmm. which plays a role in renormalization theory. And for instance, you can already see in the if you still see the blackboard here.
Yeah.
The measure here depends on the dimension.
Exactly. Yeah.
And this is a measure which is in fact dimensionless. Mm-hmm. Which means that you see when d equal 2, you see the factor epsilon, yes. D minus 2, this doesn't depend on epsilon.
True.
So it means that in a two-dimensional space-time, the field itself is dimensionless.
Right.
In dimension 1, you get an epsilon minus 1. It's minus 1/2, so you get an epsilon plus 1/2, which means that the field has a dimension of epsilon minus 1/2. Mm-hmm. So the field has a dimension, has a negative dimension in terms of length, or if you prefer, it has a positive dimension in terms of mass.
Yeah.
But in dimension larger than two, the sign changes. And the field has a negative dimension in terms of length. You see?
Right.
And that's, we are going to see that later. Well, I think you have already met that probably, but without perhaps realizing that it was connected to this simple property. But the dimension of the field is a very important property of a quantum field theory. And the fact the dimension of a field, of the field variable, namely the quantum variable that you consider, is different from d equal one, and the opposite when dimension of a space-time is larger than two, means that there are some properties of quantum field theory which are very different from ordinary quantum mechanics. And that's the subject of the theory of renormalization.
Right, and I guess one more question before I head out.
Yes.
You know, when we're taking this limit, epsilon goes to zero, do we not also have to renormalize at the same time? Because that's kind of zooming out or something, which is how I think about
okay.
normalization.
For the free field, there is no need of renormalization, at least for the simplest observable. So you can take the limit epsilon goes to zero and everything looks fine. There is a limit.
But why is that not, in some sense, implicitly renormalizing? Because we're zooming out by taking that limit in a sense. So I'm just wondering how we're getting by without it.
Well, I can show you next time, for instance, what physical observable like the correlation lengths, the two-point correlation between two fields, which is called the propagator that you have met in QFT right. 1 and 2. Why they have an epsilon goes to zero smooth limit. So for free field, it's fine.
Yeah.
And that's basically because everything is quartic, the action. Yeah. So we are dealing with Gaussian variables.
Okay.
If you think about the functional integral as some kind of probability theory, the probability measure on random variables, which is the field configuration, we are in the framework of Gaussian probabilities.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Which have very simple correlations.
Definitely.
But as long as you introduce coupling between the fields or coupling between different fields and deals with interacting field theory, then the naive limit doesn't exist. So this requires renormalization.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Thank you. All right.
Okay.
See you next time.
See you.